Recalibration Matrix is sponsored by Discount Games, Inc. and Muzon Minis. Discount Games, Inc. offers the maximum allowed discount on Marvel Crisis Protocol. When you order $30 or more, you will receive free domestic shipping. Visit us at www.discountgamesinc.com. Muzon Minis creates the highest quality gaming accessories. You can buy our product at www.museonstore.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Recalibration Matrix. I'm your host, Jay Larson, and joining me this week is your friendly neighborhood,
Greg Webster.
Hey, Greg.
Hey, Jay.
So, I'm super excited. We have a special episode that we're basically releasing to coincide with a big announcement from Atomic Mass Games, and we have two guests who've been making the rounds with the podcast, but our interview is especially special, so we're excited to get to have a chance to interview Will Pagani and Will Schick about the new banned and restricted list for that is a suggestion for organized play.
Yeah. And while they say it's a suggestion, I do feel like this is one of those things that, like, most people organizing events are probably going to stick to it. And because of that, I feel like it's going to be very, like, meta-changing. It's going to it's going to have a lot of ripples. It's going to be a big deal.
Yeah.
I did like how they kind of don't want to just be like, this card is now banned everywhere.
Right. Yeah. So we're going to spend a fair bit of time talking about that. But before we hop in, is there any news in your life, Greg?
Well, I in between us recording the interview and you and me talking now, Jay, I've moved. So, like, it was such a crazy mess.
It sounds like hell. I'm not gonna lie.
I normally have hated moving, and my wife and I bought that house about 5 years ago. No, 4 years ago, and it's actually the longest we've ever stayed anywhere. So it was kind of bittersweet by itself, but I have never moved with children before, and I didn't realize, like, I couldn't pack with them around. I couldn't unpack with them around. And as I mentioned before, my wife has a broken arm, so it was just very messy logistically. And like, there are still a few things at the house because we're listing it now. So now we go into the fun process of selling a house. So, that's my personal trials and tribulations right now.
Well, I can relate to the spouse who has a non-functioning arm situation. It's not too fun.
Yeah, that's an odd coincidence.
Yeah. Yeah, we've actually mostly been staying home. We were supposed to go to Disneyland last weekend for our anniversary, and it's not open. And it actually, they had, like, the reason they haven't been open is because the state hasn't given them guidelines yet, obviously. And it leaked out, like, what some of the considerations were that they were looking at. And, so here's the three things that they're kind of looking at requiring and that they haven't made official yet, and that Disney's, like, upset over. First one is they can only operate at 25% capacity. Disney was expecting that. That's fine. That's what they're doing in Florida right now. The other one is, the next one is that if you live outside of 120 miles to Disneyland, you can't come visit. And so,
what?
Oh, yeah, wow. Yeah. Like, Brian and I's annual pass. Turns out we don't live within 120 miles of Disneyland, but we still got decent use out of our annual passes, and it would basically be worthless. Mm-hmm. And then the third part was basically they had to be at, like, yellow tier or something like that, which was going to put it at probably months, best case scenario, out before they'd be able to reopen. So yeah. Disney's been doing a, at this point, almost like a publicity war versus the state. They've been doing like pressers, with journalists saying like, this is why, you know, we can open responsibly. And then they did like their big announcement that they were going to have to lay off a bunch of people to try to put pressure on the state, et cetera. So anyways,
that hurts to hear though. Like
it sucks.
It sucks. Yeah, like there is nothing good about anything in that. I'm sorry. And I'm really sorry that you missed, you know, your anniversary tradition.
Yeah, we got married at Disneyland and then have gone back every year that weekend for our anniversary. So the other bit of sad COVID news is Dune getting pushed back. Do you have a reaction to that?
That one is one where I think, well, okay, it's not just Dune, but Dune is the one you and I care the most about, right? Because it's the Bond movie got pushed back, then Dune, and didn't Tenet get pushed back as well?
No, Tenet.
Tenet is not.
So been. Tenet opened and did poorly, and that is why all these other movies are pushing back, because they're like, oh, we've spent hundreds of millions of dollars on these movies, and if we open right now, we're going to lose money. And so,
so it was better to wait. It was Bond getting pushed back that started everything else.
Yeah.
And then,
Bond did the announcement, Regal Cinema, which is, that's the movie theater in my town, they announced that they were going to close their theaters in response.
And Regal is the second largest, Regal's parent company is the second largest like movie theater company in the world.
Right.
And they're in the UK and EU and the US. So I don't know what movies are going to look like in a few years. Like,
yeah. This is going to be glorious. That's what it's going to look like. I'm going to be so excited to watch a movie.
I had a thought that was movie theaters. Apparently, a lot of movie theaters used to be owned by the movie companies, and that led to some, like, laws and whatnot that stopped that kind of vertical integration, because then, like, I assume Disney doesn't want to have non-Disney movies at their theaters.
Sure.
They could potentially do
monopolistic behavior.
Yeah, and so they, like, had to separate, but maybe that's what needs to happen again. Is that like Disney needs to buy some of these old movie theaters? I don't know. I'm just, it's so hard for everybody right now. And,
well, on the bright side, we have a really sweet conversation with the Wills.
Yeah, we did.
So,
huzzah. I'm still vibrating over Schick saying basically that Cable is coming, because I had theoried out the X-Men that would be coming out, and one of my questions was, are we only going to be stuck with main X-Men and like Brotherhood of Evil Mutants characters, or might we get a couple different affiliations? And I feel like Cable is either a new mutant or an X-Force, like team leader.
Sure.
And I think it would be really cool if Cable came out and he was the X-Force team leader. And then they could release, because New Mutants became X-Force eventually after all the like New Mutants got kicked out, basically. But I'm so excited for Cable. Like that's such a cool character. And Cable will probably come out around the time Deadpool does, because Cable and Deadpool was a very popular team-up comic for a couple years.
Mm.
So I'm excited.
Yeah. All right. Well. Here is our episode, or
Let's
not
do
our
it.
Episode, our interview with Will Schick and Will Pagani.
Yeah.
Hello, everyone. We are very excited for this segment. We have on two special guests, one Will Schick and Will Pagani. Hello, gentlemen.
Hello.
Hello, Will.
Hello? hold on, which Will?
I was going to say, I'm sorry, not even Pagani. Sure where to go with this now. Now we're so confused.
I have to switch to the surname nomenclature. So... for those who are unaware of who you guys are, can you guys do a real quick introduction?
Schick, go ahead.
Oh, I got to go first this time. So I'm Will Schick. I'm the head of studio for Atomic Mass Games, which basically just means that I'm in charge of overseeing all the operations of the studio, and then I have an active hand in basically all of the creative processes and marketing and all that stuff that goes along. So additionally, I was the main design of the game for Marvel Crisis Protocol and the characters, and I worked closely with Pagani to turn my crazy fever dreams into reality.
So I guess my follow-up question on this, Mr. Schick, is, as God Emperor of Atomic Mass Games,
yes,
do you have like a half hybrid human worm body, or are you full worm, full human?
Oh, I'm actually just a collective consciousness that's stored in databanks. So no body. I've transcended physical form.
Okay,
sir.
Well, we are glad that you could make the time to come on. So, Mr. Pagani, what should people know about you?
I am the senior developer at Atomic Mass Games, and I'm the guy that kind of takes all of Schick's crazy madness of fun and makes it into rules for the game.
Okay, so we are having you guys on because there's something that I think is some news that is exciting that we wanted to have you guys discuss with us. So I guess what is that news, first off?
Well, so we recently... Let me in the same room. Go ahead.
No, you do it.
No, it's over now.
It's all done. Well, we have just announced the banned and restricted list for Marvel Crisis Protocol for organized play events. And what this list is it's a banned and restricted list. But what does that mean? Well, it is a list of cards or game components that we are suggesting that you follow these lists for organized play events. So the ban list contains just one card, which is drop-off, which we will talk about. And we suggest that nobody in organized play events use this card in their roster. So that is what a banned card is. And then we also have a restricted list, which contains about five cards. And we suggest that players only play with two of each of the cards in the restricted list in their rosters or squads. And the goal of this list is to create a much more diverse, I guess, play experience for players. So by removing some cards from the game entirely or restricting some cards so that you can only have a certain number of them, that will create more options inside of rosters, inside of squads, inside of that kind of thing, to allow players to explore their options, essentially, and create more space for some of the more exciting and interesting and fun tactic cards that are not necessarily the most efficient tactic cards, or most powerful, I guess, is another way to say it.
So I know there's some people who, anytime they hear news like this, they kind of get up at arms, a little bit angry or upset or don't like change, etc. And I started this by saying that I thought it was something that is exciting and that's good for the game. And I'm assuming that you guys agree, otherwise you wouldn't be doing this. But
I would certainly hope so.
Yes. So I guess why do you think people should have that point of view, that this is something that is exciting and good for the game?
So I'll speak to that a little bit. So there are a couple things that came about with this conversation. The first is that even before we were announced as a studio, when we were working on the initial game, we decided to put in language into our organized play documents talking about the restricted list. Because we knew going in that, you know, our goal is to touch every corner of the Marvel universe. We want this game to last, you know, decades, right? And to always have new stuff coming out in characters. And when you do that, as try as you might, you can't playtest things that don't exist. I haven't figured out a way to do that yet. So, you know, when you're looking at something that's going to constantly grow and evolve and change and expand, you have to build in kind of safety nets for unintended or unpredictable consequences as you continue to kind of like, grow your understanding of the game, what you can do within the rules, you come up with crazier ideas, all this stuff. Like there's a balance to it where you work within the systems that you've defined, but there's a lot of green pasture when it comes to the system, especially at the start. So by including this, it kind of gives you that permission to be able to be like, okay, well, we've run into a problem. How do we solve this issue, right? And if it comes to an unintended consequence of a card or something like that, then you can go back to these kinds of tools And what it does is it doesn't stifle creativity and it doesn't stifle growth. The band list, let's just start with the band card of Drop-Off. Like, the perfect example of that is, so the reason that Drop-Off wound up going on a band list, which is where we just simply say, you know, players shouldn't use this card anymore. It is banned from the game. It can't be used in our suggested, like, play format, is because Drop-Off was a card that at the time when we started development, it was fine. It was a powerful card. It had a fun narrative element to it. You know, it was your flying character picking up your non-flying character, dropping them off so that they could be more effective in battle. You see that happen all the time in comics. What we learned, though, after that initial stage of, like, developing with this card, with the initial batch of, like, 50-some characters that we started out with, is that there are too many variables that happen on the card. And Pagani can speak to this a bit better than I can once I'm done with my spiel here. But what it really turned out into is that as we were working on new characters, Drop-Off continually came up among playtesters and even internally as something that we kept having to design around because it existed in the game and it was so open and it had so many different things going on. And in my mind, the place where the conversation really started and we started having a true debate about whether we should ban Drop-Off or what to do about it was when we were working on Cable, who, spoiler alert, is coming next year as one of the new characters. And basically where we were is I made this design for Cable. We had worked through the development cycle with Pagani. We were very, very happy with how he was being represented on the tabletop, how it corresponded to the character from the comics that we were trying to encapsulate. But the one problem wasn't with Cable, it was with Drop-Off. So Cable's interaction with Drop-Off continued to hamstring what we could do with the character. And Cable, you know, like many of these characters, and this wasn't the first time we had run into this situation with Drop-Off, but it was definitely one of the most egregious examples, because at this point we had no choice but to either make Cable less cool, to reduce what he should be able to do in order to make sure that Drop-Off wasn't negatively impacting the game, or we had to do something with Drop-Off. And because this was a situation that we had run into previously, and though we had been able to solve it without really undue negative effects on the character we were talking about, it kind of hammered home the point that if we want to continue to do these characters justice, if we want to continue to be able to explore the rich world of Marvel Crisis Protocol and the design space that we had, then Drop-Off really had to go. Like, the lessons we had learned in regards to what a tactic card should be and shouldn't be and how they needed to be handled had to be applied. And the best way to do that was to simply just ban Drop-Off. And by doing so, we lose a card, but we open up an entire world of possibilities for some really amazing characters that can't exist within a world, within a game that includes Drop-Off as a consistent potential. And so that really came down to, like, why banned and restricted, definitely why restricted, and then why banned came up in a conversation afterwards.
I guess one thing I would throw out there from my own experiences as well is that it does. Like, one of your stated goals that you've said with this is that also with players, it's going to give us a chance to try out some different things. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I've seen or noticed is that with my own play, one of the things I commonly had was both patch up and med pack in my roster. And there was and another thing that happened is that when Groot first came out, a lot of people didn't think he was all that good. And as I started playing Guardian some and I started playing him more, I started liking him more. But now there's also this other incentive of, like, let's say I want to have patch up and some other card on the restricted list. Being able to take Groot and I am Groot as a potential healing option is something that ends up gives Groot a place to shine where he didn't necessarily before and makes him that much more interesting or that much more appealing. And so that's kind of an example of the type of things that I've noticed with these types of banned and restricted lists. I think is great for, and I think it's obviously, it's great when a game has a diverse set of playable characters or a diverse set of lists that people are taking to events or organized play or whatever. And every one of the common complaints with any game, whether it's Magic or miniatures games, etc., is if you go to an event and everyone's playing the same things. It's just something that humans don't like. At least some subset of humans.
Well, I think that plays a lot into the psychology of gamers, right? Like, everyone wants to feel like they can play the things that they love and not be penalized for that, right? And that is absolutely part of this, right? We want people to be able to take the tactic cards that they want or whatever ends up on the banner of Strictless in the future, right? Like, it could be crisis cards, it could be gyms. Like, we left it very open for that kind of thing. It may be worth mentioning that our intention is to never have a character on a banned or restricted list. That is a goal of the studio. And should that someday become required, we will figure out what we need to do. But
I appreciate that.
You all purchase these products, right? And you paint these characters and you do all these things. You put all this time and effort and love into them, and we don't ever want to tell you you can't play with that.
Yeah. So kind of building on what Jay said, do you pay attention to what cards people are considering like auto includes when you build a restricted list? I guess a better way to say it is, does the popularity of a card affect what goes on to restricted list, or is it more about the interactions that you see?
I think it's a little bit of both, right? If we have, let's talk about why some of these cards are on the restricted list, and I think this might tie into this topic a little bit here, right? We have 5 cards total on the restricted list. 4 of them are on the restricted list for basically the same reason. And those 4 are Brace for Impact, Patch Up, Med Pack, and to a slightly lesser extent, Field Dressing. And those are all there because they're very universal cards, right? Every game you play, characters are going to take damage. So Patch Up and Med Pack are relevant, right? Every game you play, characters are going to get dazed. So Field Dressing is relevant. Every game you play, 99% of games you play, somebody's going to throw something at somebody, right? I'm sure you could play a game without throwing anything, but I don't know why you would want that. Throwing is so fun and so powerful. So these 4 cards, right, are all on the restricted list, partially due to popularity, right? They're very common in play. Whenever we see people post rosters, whenever we go play a local game source and stuff, people are constantly taking them. They're taking 2 of them, they're taking 3 of them, they're taking all 4 of them in lists, right? And while that's cool and all, and maybe some people really enjoy MedPack, our goal is always to have people play with more exciting stuff, right? Like, MedPack is great, it's powerful, it removes some damage, that's very useful in the game, right? But it's not as fun as throwing Loki at somebody with Thor, right? Like, it's not as exciting, it's not as evocative of a cinematic moment as those things. So our goal is to try to get people to play to those sort of narratives in the game. And that's sort of why those cards are on there, is they're very common. So that kind of ties back to your question, Greg, right? They're very commonly played. And then they're also very powerful. So we kind of get the double whammy on that one, right? And they're partially powerful because they're so easy to resolve, right?
Yeah, there's also a little bit of chicken or the egg here. I mean, they're popular because they're powerful, you know, et cetera. And so it can be a little bit of an indicator if something is... A lot of times the most popular cards are the ones that are most powerful or most universal, as you had mentioned.
Yeah, and I think that's interesting. And this is definitely a topic for a different discussion. But like, is popular equal powerful? Does powerful equal popular?
Right.
Is powerful fun? Is popular fun? Right. Like, and you can get into a discussion about psychology in games and stuff there, which we can perhaps another episode someday.
and I think to kind of build off of this question, right, one of the big indicators to us as to what winds up on a restricted list and things like that is when you start hearing things that are popular, but they're popular in a negative fashion. So, for example, listening to a lot of people talk about how they're approaching list builds or things that are going on, right? One of the things that I think miniatures gamers and war gamers especially love is the ability to innovate, to flex creativity through their choices and what they're taking, whether that's to tell a narrative story, whether it's to create the most efficient list possible, all of these different items. But once you have items in a system like ours, where you only get to take 5 cards, and there's always going to be a power curve because we're not playing checkers, right? So at the end of the day, you're always going to have a curve. Our goal is to make the curve as narrow as possible, but it must exist. You have to have things that are going to be less efficient and more efficient. But when somebody says, well, you know, I can't take anything but these four cards or these five cards, right? So I only have one open tactic card slot to really play with. At that point, we have a problem. And the problem, you know, the way we're approaching the solution to that is that by creating a restricted list where you can only take two of the what's considered, you know, premier items, the most efficient items, because of their openness or their applicability to the game situations. Now we've actually added the fun back, because you can't just simply say, well, I have to take these four and now I only get one choice. Now instead, you have to determine which two of the restricted lists you want to take. So there's a lot of consideration into what does your list need, what do you want to do with your list, what are you trying to accomplish on the tabletop. And then you have three slots that are open now to determine what's going to be best for what you've built around, right? What those two choices are. So I think what happens is by restricting choice, and we know this as humans, right? Plethora is actually a negative word. We use it kind of commonly these days as there's a plethora of options, but the actual definition is negative. There's so many options it is impossible to choose when a plethora has presented itself to you. And so we go back and forth, right? You have to find that perfect balance of options where it is fun and exciting, but it's not overwhelming and it's not automatic. And that's really the goal of the restricted list, is to find a way to promote that kind of list building and creativity that really gets people excited, that opens up opportunities. And like Pagani said, that also lets people take cool tactic cards that are really narrative and fun and exciting, but that aren't, you know, super efficient because they're not just basic things, right? Healing your buddy of damage is, that's neat and it's really useful, but it's not as cool as ricochet blasting a repulsor beam off of Cap's shield, or, you know, we are Grooting and healing all of your allies through Groot. These cinematic moments that really are what tactic cards are all about. And this kind of dives back a little bit into the initial point of tactic cards, which is that they were designed and developed to replicate iconic moments in the stories. They're not necessarily designed to be core to the game. In fact, we did a lot of work to make sure that if you don't play tactic cards at all, you still have a fairly good chance to win. Like, they're beneficial to your play, but they are not crippling if you're not using them. And there's a lot of reasons for that, but one of them is that we wanted these things to be seasoning, not to be the meat of the game, basically. Like, they're your salt, they're not your steak. And so that also plays back into the idea of, if you want that to be the seasoning, then you have to make sure that there's potential for people to spice their food in the way that they want. You can tell I just ate lunch, because now it's all food analogies.
One of the things that I noticed before the implementation of this list is that it was very common. You know, if I was playing Wakanda, I would have Wakanda Forever and then probably four cards from this list. And if I was playing, a Cabal, I might have Dark Reign and Cosmic Invigoration and three cards from this list. But I do think it's kind of exciting to, you know, now if I'm playing Wakanda, I'll have Wakanda Forever. I'll have two cards from this list. And now I have two more slots that, you know, haven't really been open, or, you know, I haven't really had to think about for in a lot of ways for a while. And so that's something that I think is pretty exciting too, because it opens up more, besides, I agree with you that it does give more cinematic opportunities. But it also gives me more incentive as a player to explore. There's so many tactics cards that are good at this point that aren't used, that are basically a resource now that I can start exploring.
Absolutely, and that is our hope, right? And you're talking about a five card list, right?
Yeah.
You only really get two in your eight for your roster, right?
Right.
So like now you have even more that you can play with.
Right.
I think it may also be worth mentioning things like Wakanda Forever and Dark Reign and Cosmic Invigoration, right? And why none of those cards are on the restricted list, even though like 100% of Wakanda lists are going to play Wakanda Forever, right? That type of thing to us, like the difference in Brace for Impact versus Wakanda Forever, right? Like Wakanda Forever being a defining card for the Wakanda affiliation, like that's the point of Wakanda Forever, right? Whereas like Brace for Impact was not meant to be a defining card of the Wakanda affiliation.
Sure.
If that
and
makes
if,
sense. And
if every faction could take out, right? Wakanda Forever.
they would, right? And if every faction could take Dark Reign, maybe not every, but the majority of factions would want Dark Reign. They would want Wakanda Forever. They would want Avengers Assemble, right? And that is absolutely intentional, because we made those cards to be that, like, that cinematic moment of Wakanda coming to the fight, right? That's them showing up. That's them, like, charging. And Cosmic Invigoration is like Red Skull pulling the ace out of his sleeve to activate a character again, right? So those kind of moments, those cards, I'm not going to say they will never show up on a restricted list, right? But, like, it's a lot – it's very different when we're assessing those cards versus sort of unaffiliated neutral cards that are showing up in literally every roster.
I would assume it would also be a little bit more of a problem. Like, right now, if you go to an event, an organized play event, generally – the faction that you're going to see most frequently is the one that was just released.
data has shown that, yeah.
Yeah, which is again human nature. But if I'm assuming if it got to a point where, you know, Cabal has been released for 2 years and everyone is playing Cabal at events and it's because of, you know, this certain team tactics card, then that could be a different circumstance. But that's not what we're dealing with now. That's not what the players are doing. And so, you know, I think that that's exciting.
For sure.
Yeah. And I think it's like, there's already a little bit of data about, like, the most popular characters are ending up in 60% of lists, but Medpack and Brace for Impact are in over 80% of lists too. So it's, I like the idea of, like, we can see more diversity showing up in organized playlists just by adjusting, you know, just by having a banned and restricted list.
For sure.
Are there any, I guess, going through the list, are there, you talked a little bit already about drop-off on any of the other cards. Are there any specific comments you'd like to make on them?
Yeah, so Doomed Prophecy is one that is a little out of left field, I think, for a lot of people. And Doomed Prophecy is included for a completely different reason from the other four restricted cards. Because if you've listened to everything that we've said here, you'll be like, well, Doomed Prophecy is one of those big narrative moments that they want to see in the game, and is one of those, like, sort of niche cards that does this stuff, right? But Doomed Prophecy is included for sort of a strange reason, I guess, an abnormal reason, which is, it's a very powerful card, we know that. That is not why it's included. But it is included because sort of the play experience Doomed Prophecy promotes, right? Which is, there are combos with Doomed Prophecy that create very powerful turns, something that I like to call, like, push turns, where you kind of go all in, and if it works out, it goes super duper well for you. And you can have a character daze 2, 3, 4 other characters in one activation. And that's not particularly fun. For either side, really. Like, I mean, I guess the person pulling off the combo gets to enjoy it, but it's not a super fulfilling experience even for them, right? They're like, yeah, we did it, woo! But, and if you enjoy that, that's cool. Like, I'm not trying to belittle your enjoyment of anything, but your opponent isn't going to be like, that was awesome. Your opponent's going to be like, what?
Man, this one time I played Marvel Crisis Protocol and I just got wiped off the table in one turn. It was awesome.
Yeah, and nobody's super excited about that, right? Because it doesn't feel good to have that happen. And that is a very niche interaction, but it is one that we kind of want to bring to the spotlight, right? And that's why we've included Doomed Prophecy here. Is, one, it'll help promote awareness of these type of combos and these type of plays, right? Because people will ask, hey, why is Doomed Prophecy on the restricted list? And then they'll learn, which is great. But it also helps sort of rein in the power level of that combo. Because now if you want to play a Doomed Prophecy trick roster, you got to give up one of your two restricted slots, right? You only get one patch up now. You only get one med pack. And that will help bring the overall power level of your roster down. Whereas not necessarily Doomed Prophecy's fault, but it definitely affects your roster as you build it, right? If you're not going to...
Yeah, it's one of those things where if you're going to go for the Doomed Prophecy play, it needs to come at, you know, a decision cost, like Pagani mentioned. So not only does that make your opponent more aware kind of what you're doing, because now they see that, hey, you've taken this restricted list, this restricted card, I know that this is a play that you want to make rather than having it come out of left field just because the card's in there. It also makes an opportunity cost in terms of, now you're building the list specifically for whatever this, you know, your Doomed Prophecy play. You're kind of fine-tuning around the card, which makes it a little less of the winning lottery ticket when it just randomly works, and more of a thing that your opponent can counterplay against because they're aware of it. It makes everything more intentional. And I think that's, you know, Pagani talks about how it's not particularly fun when somebody rolls up and just has an amazing, like, push turn where they daze all four of your characters. Unless that's kind of the Rube Goldberg machine that they've been trying to build, right? When you see the plan come to fruition, it's amazing. When the plan, when there is no plan and it's just kind of, we hit Yahtzee, it's not as exciting. And so I think that's also kind of what we're trying to build out with this restricted list, is making sure that those really incredible moments that take a lot of setup and preparation become worthy of that in terms of, okay, you're actually making a conscious decision to do this, not kind of just letting dice fly and hoping for the best result randomly because it might work, it might not.
I like that. I like the idea that it's adding an opportunity cost onto doing that combo. And I've definitely seen someone, or I've had someone use, you know, get four attacks in after Doomed Prophecy, and I can daze the character in response, but then they get to pop up and be scary next turn. It was pretty fun, but I like that. I like that that's in there.
So I guess one of the things I'm curious if you guys can share any information with as well is, I guess, kind of what the... you see the future of this type of document being, or this type of list. Is it something that you expect to update very frequently? Do you think it'll be somewhat static? How do you see that playing out? And obviously, I'm assuming your preference is that you never have to add more things to it. But
yeah, I mean, I think that's always the goal, right? But I think believing that as a reality is naive for sure. We do say in the article for this release that these lists are fluid, right? They are not set in stone. A card could come off the restricted or the banned list in the future. Cards could be added to these, right? The hope is to update them as infrequently as required, but to update them as required. And I know my philosophy on this, and I know you're in the same boat here, is we would much rather see the community answer any type of issues with this kind of stuff via other answers in the games and things like that than it is to constantly update this list, right? So whenever this list does get updated, it will be well thought out. It will be like, what am I trying to say? It will not be a knee-jerk reaction, essentially, to something happening. It will always be a thought out, we'll send it to the playtesters, playtesters will play rounds with it, we'll play it internally, right? Like, all that kind of stuff always gets done with anything, so...
So it's not likely to be, for example, every, you know, 1st of July, we're going to update, do the annual update to the list. It'll just be a as needed, or as we think the game will benefit from making a change, we'll do so. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. I think that's probably the best way to say it. That being said, I wouldn't expect, like we have the FAQ document that gets updated basically monthly with every release, if there's updated
right.
items or like that. I would not expect this document to behave like that at all.
Right, yeah.
I would expect this to be significantly longer.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, one of the things that you said during that answer was that the preference is for the players to kind of come up with solutions on their own, and I think that one of the things that's nice about the game is that it has been... it's had a solid enough rule set that generally there is that opportunity in the vast majority of the time, and so I don't think that people, if they're one of the people who kind of hate this idea of this list, my assumption is that this isn't going to be like something that's going to be happening all the time, or that they're going to, I don't know, have to feel bad about this frequently. So
absolutely, and I think it's also worth mentioning, right, like, this is our suggestion for organized play.
Right.
So if you're playing at home with your friends and you guys want to play drop-off, like, please, by all means, play drop-off, right? Do it. Enjoy it. Have fun. Like, do what you love.
And the reality the day, is, right, and the other thing, too, is that right now, a lot of organized play is what the tournament organizer wants to run and what the players want to play in. And it's not like there's, I'm assuming, maybe Atomic Mass has opened up like a Gestapo division where they're going to be hunting down people who aren't following the organized play document to the letter, but I'm assuming not. And that if you're a TO and you want to, you know, run an unlimited event, then, you know, have at it, man, and have fun.
Yeah, I mean, it always is going to come down to the player communities, right? Like you said, no one, we're not going to come to your house and take your toys away because you're not playing the way we suggest you play. You know, I hope that people give this stuff a try, even if they're initially adversely negative. Like, anytime somebody takes something away or limits something, it always feels bad at the start. But again, I think, you know, the whole reason that we're doing the restricted lists, especially, is to actually promote a more positive and exciting environment. Limiting those choices and giving you the opportunity to think a little bit more about your selection and why you're picking things, and then opening up the range to all those other cards that you have in your collection is really exciting and it's really fun. And I think it's just going to bring about more enjoyment from the whole list building experience and the play experience by diversification and stuff. So at the end of the day, I would just, you know, tell people, give it a try, even if you aren't initially on board, see what it does for like your enjoyment and the fun. And then if it still doesn't work for your community, you know, do what you want to do. Like, have fun in your way. The important thing at the end of the day is that everyone is just having a blast playing with Marvel superheroes and villains on a tabletop.
So, Greg, did you have any final questions for these fine gentlemen?
No. I've been imagining stormtroopers breaking down my door and tearing up my drop-off card. So I had to mute my mic because I was laughing so much.
They would be AIM agents and they'd be in hazmat B suits. Okay, let's be clear here.
Yes. That's right. Yes, apologies. Yes, yes.
Love to order
is there anything else that Mr. Shikhar Pagani that you guys would like to say, or any questions that we should have asked that we didn't?
Any more cable information?
Yes. He exists.
He exists. Oh, no. That's as far as we're going with that one.
I mean, we could probably say that he doesn't fly, and that's not why he, like, right?
That wasn't the drop off.
Because I'm sure somebody's going to be like, do they think Cable flies? Does Cable fly? I don't think
he Cable does not fly.
Okay. I guess you guys can have that pre-spoiler. Cable doesn't fly.
You guys are the best.
Choice.
Nice. I love it.
Okay, well.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just to kind of recap, I guess. It's our hope here is that this will create a more diverse list building opportunity for everyone. It will create more fun interactions, more different things happening on the table every time you play, and it will create a more diverse game experience, right? Like that's our hope with this. We never go into these things being like, haha, we got them. We got their drop-off card. It's gone now. Like, there's no, like, evil plan behind this, right? We're here. We're playing the game, too. Before COVID, I was going out to a game store every weekend playing, and we're just as excited about this and just as hyped about the diversity and stuff and the list build this will create as you guys are, hopefully.
I guess one last thing that I'll point out or ask is that a lot of times with a lot of lists like this, banner restricted lists, it could have very easily been a design decision that you guys went with to go with a different number of cards, whether that was one or three or whatever. And I guess what was kind of the thought process with the number that you did end up going with two?
Shake, you want to take this one or you want me?
I mean, like, I think really what we did for as far as that went, just to jump in, is like, the decision behind having two choices off the restricted list kind of came from looking at the numbers in terms of how many tactic cards a player takes in their list to begin with. And of course, then also thinking about crisis cards and infinity gem cards, like going forward. Because obviously, like Pagani mentioned at the front end, this could impact or have effects on other things in the future that are not characters. Because again, our fervent standpoint is that we never want to be restricting or banning characters of any type. So the two number just kind of worked out really well in terms of forcing a choice, but not feeling so restrictive or so open that it was meaningless. And that's the big thing. The last thing you want to do is make a restricted list that has so many options, it doesn't really do anything. So now you're just putting out the negative connotation of a restricted list to people being like, oh, they're trying to stop me from using my stuff, and not have it be impactful. And then, of course, we also don't want to artificially limit things so much that it just feels like a sneaky ban list. So 2 was really the level that at which we felt this was a meaningful choice. But it also offered enough flexibility and choice that it became interesting in list building. It became interesting in terms of, okay, I get 2, which 2 do I want? And that also factored a little bit into what we were looking at in terms of just the number of cards that we felt needed to be on the list and things like that as well. But
awesome. Okay. Well, we can, I think we've gotten everything basically covered at this point. So wanted to thank you guys for taking time out of your day to do this podcast with us. We definitely appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having us on.
Thank you so much for having us. We had a blast.
Yeah. And thank you, listeners. And I hope everyone has a great day.
You too, Jay.
Until next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Adios.
Okay, well, there you have it. Some exciting news from Will and Will. And this is the perfect opportunity to promote subscribing to our podcast on Patreon and joining the level that gets you access to our Discord server, because I feel very, very confident that there's going to be a very active and lively discussion about this topic.
Yeah, I'm logging in right now.
The Discord server. And so I'm looking forward to everyone discussing the non-restricted list.
Yeah, it's going to blow up. It's going to be so exciting to read.
Yeah.
Also, subscribers to our Patreon get next week's episode and bonus episode as well. So it's a really great time, and we would really appreciate your support. So thank you.
Yeah. Last few things to plug. Check out discountgamesinc.com. Check out Muse on Minis. And actually, when this goes live, we're going to be shipping that day out the new releases of like Kingpin and Punisher and Taskmaster and Bullseye and Daredevil and the New York City construction site. So get those orders placed, and we'll get them shipped out to you.
Mine are already placed. I'm so excited.
Huzzah!
Yay! Cannot wait for Kingpin.
I agree.